Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted history of Greystone Manor, a conversation with owner and psychic medium, Heather Reese Madison. The Greystone Manor Bed and Breakfast is a beautifully preserved Victorian mansion along the Erie Canal in Royalton, New York. Nestled in the quiet town of Gasport, this manor is a gem on the Niagara Wine Trail. Silas Newcomb settled the property in 1833, planting apple and pear trees that still bear fruit today. Over the decades, the estate changed hands from Silas's son Albert to neighbors Horace and Harriet Chapin, and then to Curtis Root in 1865. Root, a racehorse enthusiast, left a lasting legacy with his racetrack and the famed racehorse, Hamiltonian. But beneath its historical facade, Greystone Manor harbors a world of the supernatural. Visitors have reported the sound of heated arguments, the echo of ghostly horse hooves, and the chilling sight of a woman's apparition at the window. Whispers of a mysterious vortex in the basement and shadowy figures wandering the halls add to the eerie atmosphere. But what is it like to be a psychic medium living in this historic manor? And why are the former owner's spirits excited about Heather and her husband living in the home? Join us as we delve into the haunted history of Greystone Manor and uncover the secrets that linger within today on The Grave Talks. It is a very cool looking house. Now, this was originally built as a house, correct? It was not obviously a bed and breakfast. They didn't have those back in the day.
Right. It was a single family home back in the day when they first built it.
And it's big.
Somewhere in the late 1830s.
This is a good size house.
Yeah, it's over 4,000 square feet, which is pretty good size.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've used some of the areas too in the basement. We've made them into usable spaces too.
For
a Victorian, usually the basements are pretty scary looking or damp or have issues, but they have like surprisingly tall ceilings. And then we made them, you know, made that into rooms down there.
Now, that is interesting because so often with houses that old, you're absolutely right. Or it's a dugout cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might have stored things, put canned goods down there or something, but they didn't use it for living space. So that's really cool that you were able to do that.
We sort of lucked out with the house because of the owners who had it directly before us. They bought it in 2000. And she was an antiques dealer. She knew what she was looking at when she bought the house, knew it was a diamond in the rough type thing, also knew that the house had never been altered. So it was never updated. It still had gas lamp features. It had no electric upstairs. So she had to come in and run all electric through the whole house, you know, brand new plumbing. It had some of the knob and tube electric from the family who was there, two families before her. Because that family, the Root family, they ran electric, but the family after them didn't do anything else. They didn't upgrade anything else. So pretty cool that she did all that. She saved everything. She put brand new floor in the basement, brand new concrete. It was all dirt down there. There were black snakes in there because the stone walls in the basement had cracks in them.
Oh.
So it was a pretty awful space down there. It had red brick walls that were, it was all that Niagara brick where it's that red brick that sort of crumbles over time. And it was falling apart. Bricks were missing and the walls were, she was afraid they would just collapse. So she had to remove all the walls down there, put all the new floor in, put drainage in, and raise the cellar floor about a foot. which is sort of interesting, was because when people do get pictures as far as orbs or shadows or whatever in the basement, it looks like they're half on the floor because the floor should be a foot lower.
Oh, which is sort of interesting. That is interesting.
Because we've had that before. People will be like, why is this orb like a half circle? It looks weird. I'm like, yeah, no, because the floor should be lower.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you and your husband end up buying this property? Were you looking for something to turn into a bed and breakfast?
No, not at all. I own my own house. When we met, I own my own house. We were living closer to the city of Buffalo in one of the suburbs there. So we're in the middle of suburbia. And he's from the country. So he's not from this area at all. And he really wanted something with more land, a little more space. So we just started looking, and we weren't really seriously looking. We were just looking to see what was out there. And so we probably looked for about 6 months or so. And we gave up after a certain amount of time because a lot of the houses, I wanted something older. I love the Victorians. My houses were always like 1920, always pre-World War II, because I love the woodwork and all that. So we had to compromise. Something with land, but also something that was older. But everything we were finding that was older was really beat up and needed so much work. So we gave up, got rid of all my apps on my phone, like, you know, Zillow and stuff. And then this house, so this listing kept popping up on my phone. It kept saying, hey, we found a house for you. And I'm like, yeah, we're not looking anymore. We're going to wait a year. And it came up 4 times. And I finally called, you know, my friend who is our real estate agent. And I said, listen, this one house keeps popping up. And the pictures didn't do the place justice. I mean, whoever the real estate agent was just took pictures of like weird, like a corner of a room, nothing pretty, like none of the spiral staircase, nothing like that, really. Nothing, no pretty pictures. But anyway, so the day we came out to look at it, we looked at 2 other ones that day too. And we got to this house. And as soon as we walked in the kitchen, my friend, who's a real estate agent, got a text saying that the house was sold. Someone else had already put a bid on it. So we turned around and walked out. Yeah, my husband had gone into the basement while we were in the kitchen talking, though, about the house selling and all that. And so he got to at least see that the basement was dry and looked all brand new down there because all that new concrete and everything. But anyway, so we left to go look at the other 2 houses. And that was a whole nother weird story. There was just like, as soon as it was sunny and beautiful, we looked at this house, went to go look at the other 2 houses, and this crazy storm came out of nowhere. This thunderstorm just, it was so bad we had to pull over because we couldn't see. Like, it was driving rain as we were going towards the other 2 houses. We were like being stopped. So that should have been our first clue that something weird was going on. But we got to the other 2 houses, and they needed so much work. And the one was just filling up with water because the cistern was still hooked up and the basement was just flooding out. And we just were thankful that we happened to see it on a day when the rain was hitting, because if it wasn't rainy, we would never have known that.
Right.
So anyway, so went home, and you know, we didn't like the other 2 houses. And my husband's like, well, I really like that first one. I'm going to put a bid on it. And the house is in foreclosure for about 4.5 years. So it had been sitting empty. There's nothing in here. And he goes, I'm going to put a bid in. I'm going to bid a little higher because, you know, obviously someone already had a bid on it. But we were going for a VA loan, and he had and because the house is foreclosure, so we're dealing with 2 government agencies that are like famous for like turning these loans down because it's risky with the VA. They usually won't approve old houses. So we were just goofing around, like literally just, okay, let's see what they say. And the next morning they called us and said, hey, you guys bought a house. And we were just screwing around. Like, we were not really serious. That's how we bought it. But the weird part is I didn't look at the house. So I didn't get a read or a vibe, you know, as a psychic medium, you know, obviously, you know, anybody, when you walk into a house, you get a feel for the house. You know, you walk around, you're like, oh, it feels good in here. I like this vibe. I like this feeling, or whatever, however you want to word it. I never got a chance to do that here. So called my friend, the real estate agent, and I said, listen, we need to go back through that house because we never looked at it. And apparently we bought it. And she's like, she goes, well, you're under contract. You can't go through it until you do the final inspection. And we're like, yeah, but we never looked at it. She goes, well, no, I guess you can't come in until blah, blah, blah. And we're like, okay. So we told her, so when the final inspection comes up, let us know. We have to be there for it. She goes, sure, no problem. And it's New York State, so it takes forever to do things here. Like 2 months later, they're doing the final inspection. She had forgotten all about that. And she texted us and said, hey, the walkthrough went great. Your house is awesome. I checked everything for you guys. You're all good to go. And we're like, no, she forgot all about that. We hadn't looked at it. So she walked through for us again. I never got a read on it. So we came over and we had to like peek in the windows. We were like spying on the house, trying to see what it looked like inside because we had no idea what it looked like. We were trying to take pictures from the outside just to see where the rooms were. We had no idea. So we sort of bought it that way. And then, so we didn't realize things were going on until we looked at those pictures, though. We got home after taking pictures of the house. And my husband had had some weird things happen. He's ex-military, so he's a skeptic. You know, he's always sort of debunking things a little, but he's always, you know, even though I do what I do, he's always saying, well, maybe there's a logical explanation or this or that. But he saw a woman standing next to him when he was looking in the back window, the back door of the house. He thought it was his daughter who had come with us that day. And he said he could see her feet and legs. And then he put his hands down to talk to her and there was nobody there. So he was all freaked out. And he asked me, like, was she just standing next to me? I said, no, she's been up front the whole time on the lawn. She wasn't back here at all. So he goes, I think something weird's going on there. I'm like, don't even start. Like, don't start. Because at that point, it was too late. We had already,
bought
closing
it.
On the house. So he looked at his pictures on and saw the face of a woman peeking out of the window. Like, the curtain was pulled back. You see her face. Like, and it looked like she was looking right out. Because he took a picture of his daughter and granddaughter on the front carriage step of the house. And they happened to be sitting there where you could see the bay windows behind them. And you could see this woman looking at them from the window, from inside the house. And that's when he's like, something weird's going on. He's like, look at this picture. What do you see? And I'm like, and it's clear. You can absolutely see a face. So that's basically how we bought it. We didn't know it was haunted. We had no idea because we're not from this area. You know, neighbors started telling us, the locals were telling us some of the rumors about the house, things that people had experienced.
Was that a strange feeling for you to have people telling you things like that? Really, when you don't even, you haven't even moved into your house. It's kind of like, what have I done? Or did you find it exciting? A little bit of both?
It happened after we moved in is when people started telling us stuff. But we apparently, like, it's because I didn't know the history or anything. And the house sat for so long because it was owned by the Kalkenberg family. They bought it in 1923. And they were dairy farmers. So they're hardworking people. They had the cows, the barns, and all that stuff. When they bought the house, though, they never changed anything inside. So it all stayed original to the 1830s and to the families before them. So they sort of left everything. They didn't decorate or do anything different inside. So, it was sort of a strange feeling because we didn't really realize anything as far as it being haunted. We didn't even think that way because the house looked pretty good because the lady before us had sort of cleaned it up. She did a lot of the like window repair, but the house had sat for a long time with the family, the dairy farmer family when they were here. The woman who ended up owning the place, she was by herself though, from like the late or mid 1960s to the year 2000. She was blind and she was living here by herself. And so the house is falling into disrepair. I mean, their windows missing, the paint was peeling, like it was all overgrown with like shrubs and ivy. So it just looked horrible. So like the locals were all like, oh, the house is haunted, you know? And there were never lights on in the house because she was blind.
She's blind.
So she didn't need light. Yeah. So it's just the rumors, the kids who grew up in this area, you know, though that's the spooky house, you know?
Well, and it looked like a haunted house, you know, kind of like the typical haunted house you would think of. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, that's what it looked like then. And then, but you know, when I moved in, so the first day we moved in, we had, you know, a bunch of people helping us move in. I had all my nieces and nephews and all my family, friends and stuff. You know how that is. It's always chaos. It's like 40 people in here all helping us move in. So it was chaos. So I couldn't really focus on the house because there's so much going on. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning is when we realized like, okay, something's up because it was quiet. Everybody was gone. We're sitting in the main parlor and just having coffee sitting there and we're hearing running in the rooms above us. It sounded like bum, 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 like someone was running down the hallway. And then we heard what sounded like, you know, when you have an empty dresser and you open the dresser drawer and it goes bum, 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 that weird sound. If it's like an empty dresser drawer or like a something being dragged across the floor. And we're just looking at each other going like, is someone here? We thought someone might have slept over in one of the rooms after moving. Like maybe they just crashed upstairs. We didn't realize they were still here. And we're like, is someone here? We look, there's no cars. We're like, what's going on? We go up there and there's nothing. Nothing's out of place. Nothing's moved. And then we're like, okay, something's weird is going on. But that's when, you know, I was introduced to the spirits here. Because I had the first person I came into contact with was a male. And he was dressed in old-timey clothes, looked like 1800s. To me, like he had long, like tall boots. But I knew nothing about the history at that point. I didn't know it was a horse breeding farm and that there was a racetrack here. But he was almost dressed in like riding gear. A handsome man. I mean, he sort of said, you know, I lived here. I'm the owner. You know, he introduced himself to me. And then his wife, who was appearing a lot older than him, was in the front hallway. And then I ran into her. And she's like, she said the same. She's like, I run the house though. Like he was financial, but she ran it, you know? And she was very strict, very Victorian, and dressed very Victorian. Again, with the longer skirt, you know, the high collar. So they introduced themselves to me right away. And I saw them immediately. And, you know, and they're like, no, it's, and it was funny to have a conversation with them because they were very present. And they said, no, we wanted to bring family back into the house. And I was saying, well, thank you for allowing us to live here. Is it okay that we're here? And they said, yes, we want a family back in the house. And I thought they meant, because my husband and I both come from big families. I mean, there's, you know, 8 kids in my family. He's from a family of 8 as well. And then we have all the nieces and nephews and everybody. And we have all the holidays here and everything. So I'm thinking that's what they're talking about. And then 2 years later, my cousin was doing our ancestry. Like he was doing ancestry.com, facing the family tree back. He goes, hey, he calls me and goes, hey, just so you know, just want to let you know, we're actually blood related to the Root family who lived in your house. They're our cousins. They're our first cousins.
Whoa. That totally gave me goosebumps.
Yeah. I was like, wow. What do you mean? And he's sending me all the pictures of the family tree. We had the same, like 4 times great grandfather, Joshua Root. He had Joshua Jr., which is our line. So there are 3 boys. And then the Thomas Root family line is the people who lived here. And then John Root. So the odd thing is when those people were all living, so when my grandfather, this 4 times great grandfather was alive, they all would have been first cousins. They all would have known each other. All of our relatives would have known each other.
That's amazing.
Because you're talking about 1860s, 1850s. So that was just, that totally freaked me out. And then they were just laughing. The spirits here were like, well, that's what we talked about. We wanted family. We wanted blood back in the house. So they wanted me here. Because I kept saying, because I own my own house. And I held on to that house for a good couple of years until I eventually ended up selling it. Like once we were here a couple of years, sold it and then ended up, you know, so I didn't have that house to deal with as well. I didn't want to have to deal with the 2 mortgages and everything.
That's so how creepy absolutely is that? Amazing. And then the whole story about how you never even really got a good look at the house because there was an offer on it. Okay, we're not going to get this one. Then you end up getting it. Like the whole story of how you ended up with the house is weird.
We just kept expecting it to fall through. We were not expecting this to go forward the whole time. We were like, they're never going to approve this. Like it's a VA loan. They're going to be like, yeah, it's 1830s house and construction. Like they're never going to approve it because it's a risk. Usually they're very, very picky about that stuff, but they're just like, yep, you bought a house. We're like, what do you mean?
Wow. So, now did, Curtis Root and his wife, they, got the house in 18 something. Did they actually build the house that you see today? Or does that go back before then?
It goes back to the Newcomb family. Okay. The Newcombs were here. 1833, they owned it. A man named Silas Newcomb. And he was a fruit farmer. He was a cooper. He built carriages on the property. So there used to be a big carriage house. And he was a blacksmith as well. Big blacksmith shop. So we still have fruit trees growing on the property that go back to the Newcomb family. There's a couple huge pear trees, 200 feet tall. They still make pears. They're at the very, very top of the tree. You can't get at them, but they're up there. But they're up there. So those people were here for a long, long time. They were here until 1860. Well, from 1833 to 1860. And he had two boys, so Albert and A.E. Newcomb. And when the house passed on to the boys, there was some sort of falling out because we have all of their wills. We have all of their records and everything.
That's interesting that you have that.
Yeah, it's fascinating because you can really see sort of what was going on. Mm-hmm. And there was some sort of falling out with Silas and the boys because Albert ended up with the house and his wife and kids moved in here. But they had like 265 acres and the house and all the money and all that. And then the other brother only ended up with 2 acres of apple orchards. That was it. So there's some sort of something happened.
Yeah.
But that's what we hear here. We hear men fighting. We hear people in the hallway. It's audible. It's not just EVPs or anything. You literally hear people like this murmuring. Sounds like men fighting, talking like low tones. And it's in the hallway upstairs a lot. We've caught people, friends of ours have caught EVPs where the one in the green room, which is where Curtis Root actually died, was up in that room. But this man says, screw you, get out. Like you hear all this crazy fighting. People think it's us sometimes when they stay over, but the way the B&B is set up, we're in the very back part of the house. We're not in this main part of the house, the main B&B part at all. So like during the night when you stay or whatever you're doing, if you're doing investigating and stuff, we will be in here with you. We're like in the back area.
Yeah. And you kind of want to warn your guests, like we are not fighting. Cause that would be uncomfortable if you're staying in bed and breakfast and you think your hosts are fighting.
Well, they said that they're like, were you guys like downstairs in the, they think we're at, we have a spiral staircase that goes up to the second floor and they think we're like at the base of the stairs because you can't really tell where it's coming from, but it almost sounds like it's coming from the hallway or like that area. And they're like, were you guys like talking last night? Like, or arguing? We're like, no, we're not going to stand outside your door and argue. We're going to argue back in our part, but we are. We're not going to be all pissed.
We'll keep it to ourselves. Now, do you mind if I ask you a little bit about you? Because you are a psychic medium. Were you pretty young when you realized you had a gift like that?
It sort of runs in the family. I mean, I come from a family of people who are very sensitive, psychics. My grandmother, my mom's side, used to read tea leaves and things like that. And we would use Ouija boards and all that. But yeah, I would say so. I mean, even from the time I was a little kid, I would go to certain places. My cousins had a big old dairy farm, which is weird that I bought a dairy farm, out in near Syracuse. And that place, like there were areas I wouldn't go into. Like, there's a room off the kitchen that was just bad juju in there. I could hear a woman talking in there. So I would hear and see things. I'd see shadows and all kinds of stuff. So those times since I was a little kid. But for me, things sort of went crazy for me when I got older. Even though I could pick up on things, I always seemed sensitive to things. But when I was like 20, I think I was 21, I went with friends out to California on vacation, went to Huntington Beach, and I drowned out there. So we were boogie boarding. I had like a boogie board velcroed to my wrist, and we had been in the water riding the waves in. But I'm from this Buffalo, New York area, but my family is Canadian. So my mom's side, it's all like we're half Canadian. So we would spend a lot of time up in Canada, the Canadian beaches up on Lake Erie. And the waves on Lake Erie are like 2 feet tall. Like they're not waves. I'm used to that water. I'm used to like just a regular lake. But I was out at the ocean. I was at this surf beach. So we were riding the waves in. Wasn't paying attention. My friends went to go sit up on the shore. And I'm like, I want to ride some more waves. And so I was out there by myself. But it was August and there were a ton of people there on the beach, an absolutely packed beach. So I came in off a wave and I'm walking up to the shore and all of a sudden this wave hit me from behind. It was taller than me because it took me into the wave like a washing machine, like it curled me back into the wave and I could not get out of the water. And the boogie board was still attached to me. So the board was also swirling around and pulling me under. And I was trying to get it off of my wrist, but I couldn't. And next thing I know, And I'm a strong swimmer. I grew up with a swimming pool, a diving board. Like, I'm a very strong swimmer. And I could not feel the bottom to push up to the surface, to break the surface of the water. You know what I mean? I couldn't, because I was already, mm-hmm. I was deep in water at that point. Then all of a sudden I'm watching myself struggle in the water. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. I shouldn't be able to see myself. Right. I'm watching myself struggling.
That's interesting too, that you had that knowledge, like, oh, I shouldn't be able to be seen.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I'm like, that's not good.
Not good.
I could see myself not being able to get, I can't describe it. Cause I was being turned so quickly in the water. And I'm like, okay, that's not good. I'm thinking that. And the next thing I know, I'm standing on the shore. I'm on the dry sand, toe to toe with a guy wearing all black. And he had black shoes that were like hobnail, like rounded toes, shoes, and like dress pants, black jacket. But he was so tall, I was looking at his sort of shoulders. So he was a lot taller than me. I'm 5'8", but this guy had to have been, he was way taller than me. Like, I remember thinking at the time, that's odd, because I'm looking right at, into his chest, so he's way taller than me. And I remember thinking, what the hell? And I remember saying to him, what is going on? And then I said, I think my friends are probably worried about me. I need to go check in with them, let them know I'm okay. Because I'm realizing, like, something really messed up just happened. Because the last thing I knew, I was in the water, and all of a sudden I'm standing on the shore. But I remember looking around. But my toes are touching his toes, so he's standing that close to me. But I remember looking around, and everyone's sitting on blankets and stuff, beach stuff, and they're within like feet of me, and no one's looking at us. No one's like, hey, are you okay? Where'd you come from? I'm not spitting up water, nothing. I'm just standing there. And so I run over to my friends, and I'm like, did you guys see what happened? I go, that was so weird. Like, I don't know what the hell just happened. I'm going, I think that guy pulled me out of the water. And they're like, what guy? I'm going, the guy in black. Turn around, and there's like nobody on the beach. Huntington's a huge beach, and it has like skateboard or rollerblading and stuff at the top part of the beach wall type area, and it's a big deep beach. And then I'm thinking, maybe it's somebody in a wetsuit, because it was black that I was seeing, right? But nobody looked like that. Nobody around me, no one wearing black, nobody in a black suit. And I'm like, what the hell happened? It was the weirdest thing. And then after that, things started going crazy. I'm starting to see people around people. I'm hearing voices. I'm, you know, I can tell when people are talking to me that they're lying. Like, I'm hearing like all this stuff, or that I need to tell them something. You know, once people are telling me a story or whatever, I'm like, I'm feeling like I have to jump and like, no, don't do that. Do this. Like, really odd. It was so odd. It was like pouring gasoline on a fire. So whatever gifts I had just made it go crazy. So I definitely say it was some sort of weird near-death experience. Something odd happened. It got to the point where I had to ask my guides, because then they were introducing themselves, like, it's okay, you know, you had a, we pulled you out, you're fine. But unfortunately, this is now going on. And they did explain it to me. They explained the whole near-death experience process to me. They said it's like a rubber band. So like when you're earthbound, you're sent down to earth from the higher order in reincarnation, right? And your spirit moves in like a, almost like a counterclockwise. You're being sent down to earth, right? So you're spiraling down to earth, and your spirit moves in a certain direction. When you go into near-death experience, you are going the opposite direction, because you're heading up, you're sending up. And what happens is you'll reach the higher order, like you start to cross over, and then they're like, hey, it's not time to come over yet. And they send you back down. But they said, it's like a rubber band that loses its stretchiness. Now you're connected to the higher order. You shouldn't have been able to go that far, but you did. So now you're sort of got one foot in each world in a weird way. That's why spirits will come up to you and try and communicate, because they think you're crossing over. They see your spirits moving in a weird direction.
That is like, so interesting to me. And it makes sense that how an experience like that would open you up, especially you, because you already had abilities. I would think, because I've heard from a lot of different people who've had experiences like that, that it totally changed their trajectory in the world, that experience did. Yeah. And how could it not, really? But especially like in your case, now it's opened up this whole other level of ability. And now you got to hone that. What do you do with it? You know, it's like, how do I interpret all this information that's coming in?
Right. And then I was just, you know, working regular jobs and stuff. So I wasn't doing readings or anything for anybody, but it was odd, but I would get a lot of messages for people. And it was getting to the point where it was sort of crazy. I had to block it though. I had to ask them to please block some of it because it was overwhelming. Like if I went into a crowd, like say you're walking through the mall or something, and I'd be like, they were targeting certain people, like, see that guy over there? And they'd tell me stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to know about that. You know, like they would point people out. I sort of tried to not focus on it just because, you know, life was going on. I was working, I was busy, got married, then had kids. And that's when things started getting crazy again. You know, I started seeing things and also the colors. So when I was crossing over, I saw these weird colors that don't exist. I always say that. And it also looked like milky or viscous, like it was a thick substance I was in, but it was warm, but it was really bright. And it was like magentas, light blues, purples. That's the color of the higher order, apparently. Like when you start to cross over, you're going into this different phylum or energy level. It's super weird. But then I would have these bizarre dreams with those colors in it. And then I knew I was having some sort of visitation dreams, or they were like visitation dreams. And one, they told me that I was pregnant and I was going to have a girl. And I didn't know I was pregnant. Like I wasn't trying to have a baby. And they're like, oh, you're having a girl. And like,
and that's how you found out.
My angels. And I'm like, okay. And you know, I had no idea. And then 2 weeks later, sure enough, yeah, I was pregnant. And I was like, what the hell? So I always knew it was a girl because they told me. And she's the reason why I started really getting into this. I had already had a son. My son was 2 years older than her. And so when my daughter was about 2, she started telling me stuff. She said, you know, I came to be with you guys. She said, I was watching you and I chose to be with you. She said, she told me all about how she died before. She died in a car accident. She told me her name. She told me all this information about her previous life. And she was only 2. She was telling me all this stuff. And I'm like, what the heck? And then I started sort of opening up again because I was trying to get a handle on her. Like, what is going on? And it was just so creepy, just the things she was telling me, which is one after another, you know, things she couldn't know. She had really weird habits, even though she was 2. She was asking for, like, she wanted vanilla ice cream with maple syrup on it because that's how she used to eat it all the time back in the day. Odd
so
things. She
gave her interesting.
She said her phone number was TR3405. Which is, she didn't even know her new phone number. She didn't know her number now. She's only 2. So she was giving me phone numbers that were like back in the day, you know? So yeah, she was definitely weird. And that's when I started really opening back up again, trying to get a handle on her. And then everyone would start asking her questions because she'd talk about all these people in her past life, you know, or she would talk about them like they were current people though. That's what was creepy. You know, she'd say like, my name was Brina, my grandmother, I was baby Brina because my grandma Brina raised me and all this stuff. And it sounded like she was from the South. We were in Atlanta at the time. And we had just moved back up to Buffalo. So she'd ask for all the Southern stuff. It was super weird, but she wasn't exposed to anything Southern. When we lived down there, she was only 2. So it was very, very strange. And then it got weird when at one point after about a year of this, her talking about all this past life stuff, I would give her a bath and I'd try and get information out of her because she'd be quiet, you know, because that way I was focusing it. She'd, you know what I mean? It was the one time I could sort of talk to her and she'd focus. And I'd say, you know, hey, you know what? I'd try and ask her questions like, do you remember the city you lived in or what did it look like? All this. And then she said, I was told I'm not allowed to talk about that anymore. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, they said I'm not supposed to be remembering this stuff and I'm not supposed to talk about it. And I said, they. I'm like, what do you mean? Who's they? You know, because I'm sitting there trying to get her to describe who's talking to her. And she got really pissed and she said, I'm not allowed to talk about it anymore. And so it got really strange. I mean, I had seen her doing things that were so out of the norm. You know, I caught her pitching pennies with her brother, who was 2 years older than her. They're sitting in the kitchen one time. And again, she's 2 years old and they've got Monopoly money in their hands and they have pennies. And I walk in and they're throwing pennies against the wall. I'm like, what are you guys doing? She's like describing it. Plus she talked like a little gangster when she was little. She had this real rough voice. She's like, we're playing this game. She goes, you put the money down and then try and throw the pennies. Or she's literally telling me how to pitch pennies. I have no idea how to pitch pennies. So she's gambling. And she kept going, see how my teeth are all cracked over here? And they weren't. And I'm like, okay. She goes, yeah, I used to open bottles with my teeth all the time. And I ended up cracking these teeth up here. So she's telling me all this crazy stuff. And I'm like, what in the world is going on with this kid? So anyway, she told me she wasn't allowed to talk about it anymore. And I'm like, okay. And then she wouldn't talk about anything anymore. That was it. Last time she talked about it. Until I was teaching her how to drive when she was 16. I had taught her brother how to drive, got his license, no problem. Go to the parking lot. We'd go to the church because it's an open parking lot. And like, we're going to practice here. And then we're going to go drive around a little bit. We're going to go to the cemetery, you know, like you usually do when you start to learn how to drive. She goes, and all this time, I never brought any of this up with her. She's now 16. So I never talked about it with her because I didn't want to make her feel weird or like a freak or anything weird, you know? Because I had written down notes, though, the stuff she had said. Anyway, starting to learn how to drive. I'm telling her, you know, just so you get a feel for the car. I want you to drive around the parking lot. She goes, I feel like I know how to drive. And she had told me she died in a car wreck. She crashed her car into a tree. That's how she died. She had tried to fix it. There were tools on the counter. And she was telling me all about how she tried to fix it. She thought she fixed it, but apparently she didn't because she lost control and smashed into a tree. That's how she died. So I knew she knew how to drive. And she's telling me now, I know how to drive. And I'm like, oh, no. And I'm remembering. I'm like, no. I go, no, you have to practice. She's like, how weird. She's like, I don't know why I feel like I can just drive. She pulls out the parking lot. She starts driving around the neighborhood like she's driven her whole life. And she's like, she goes, this is so weird. She's like, I feel like really comfortable. Like, I absolutely know how to drive. She's like, why would I know how to drive already? And I'm like, well.
About I'm thinking, that.
I'm like, well. She's 16, so I'm thinking, well, maybe she can handle it, right? You know. And I said, well, you know, you did this weird thing when you were little, and I told her, you know, everything. And she's like, what the hell? She's like, that's the coolest thing ever. So I'm like, okay. And she goes, go show me your notes. So I show her all the notes, and she's sort of, you know, again, been a long time, so she wasn't really remembering, but she's like, this does sound familiar. She goes, started Googling like the names. She's Googling the phone numbers that she had given me when she was two. And sure enough, the only places that had that phone number were Atlanta or Denver. That was it. They had the TR-3405, like the exchange. And a bunch of the other information, she was linking it to this, to Atlanta. Cause she was telling me that's where she died and that's where she was born this lifetime. So super weird, honestly. And that's when I started really opening up and being like, okay, something's going on here.
Yeah.
Like there is something is happening. Like, you don't just die. Something, obviously, this kid is literally sitting here telling me, oh yeah, no, that's what happens. I'm watching you. Here I am coming back. So it was an absolute trip.
Yeah. And from a 2-year-old, none of this stuff. You shouldn't even know how a phone works at 2. You know, they punch buttons, but what do they punch? I don't know.
She's telling me how to gamble.
Yeah. That's so crazy. Now, does she have abilities now like you do?
I mean, it runs in the family. She's real weird about it. She really isn't into this stuff at all. She's sort of funny about it, but she does. I mean, you know, I think she inherited some of it, but she's not going down that path at all. Like, she's not, you know, no. I think it spooked her in a weird way.
Yeah.
She also thinks it's really cool, but I think it did freak her out.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the haunted history of Greystone Manor with owner and psychic medium, Heather Reese Madison. For more information, go to greystonemanor.com. That's Greystone spelled G-R-A-E stone. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything without the commercials, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing, another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.